Hello, friends, and welcome to The Creative Pulse, a podcast about people and their creative passions. I'm your host, Angela DeBerger, and there's nothing I love more than getting caught up in a great book, a fantastic song, an incredible photograph or expressive painting, a funny TV show, an action-packed movie, or a touching piece of theater. If it has to do with the creative arts, I'm all in. And that's why I'm excited that on each episode of the Creative Pulse podcast, you'll hear from inspiring creators about how they express themselves by imagining, experimenting, and creating. And bonus, you'll get lots of ideas about how you can explore your creativity too. Anytime someone can look at raw materials and envision there's something new inside of them, just waiting to be revealed, I'm always wowed. Today's guest spots driftwood and sees the possibility for sculptures. He is able to breathe new life into reclaimed wood too, creating new ways for it to be enjoyed and valued. He says that nature feeds the soul and heals us to the core, so working in it and with it has been an enlightening experience. After a successful career in another field altogether, he discovered his creative passion in 2019 while making a driftwood sculpture of a shark for his brother-in-law as a gift. During that process, he says that he finally, in his mid-30s, realized what he wanted to be when he grew up. He shared a photo of the shark sculpture online, and very quickly, he had more than 20 requests for commissioned work. And with that, his company, Zenwood Design, was officially in business. He believes that sustainability should be at the heart of all business practices, and protecting our beautiful planet is a responsibility we should all take more seriously. Along with rave reviews from his clients, he's also an award winner, named Sculpture Artist of the Year in 2021 at the Corporate Livewire Innovation and Excellence Awards. I am so pleased to welcome Brendan Rawlings to the podcast.
Angela, nice to be on. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Brendan, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I mean, your work is so cool. The minute I saw it, I thought I have to talk to Brendan. Creating sculptures out of driftwood and then the reclaimed wood is pretty new in your life. And I'm really curious about what drew you to making artful woodworking pieces in the first place.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, it kind of happened by accident on my brother-in-law's birthday. And he'd seen a shark in a window of a shop, and it was, you know, a few hundred pounds or whatever. It's too much for us to pay.
Yeah.
And my wife said, oh, do you think you could give it a go? And I said, well, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Wow.
Yeah. So it ended up coming out, you know, better than the one in the shop, and the rest is history, as they say.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, what even, so like your wife saw this and just knew that you had some kind of artistic potential within you, or had you done woodworking before? Like what prompted her to think, I bet Brendan could take this on.
Yeah, good question. I think, we lived in Dubai for a long time. We're in Dubai for nearly 12 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we've mentioned sort of off recording, it's a very unique place and somewhere that you can't really nurture those sort of passions, you know, painting maybe, but, you know, things that involve big tools and all that kind of thing. It isn't really set up to accommodate that.
Right.
So, you know, I've always loved woodwork. I used to do woodwork with my dad, who was, you know, again, self-taught, and used to, you know, put shelves up around the house. And I used to love going in the garage and playing with all the sawdust and messing about with him, you know, sort of as a little boy. And nice. I've got fond memories of that, I think. And so, you know, I'd always take interest in woodworking shows or, you know, anything to do with woodwork, really, I suppose. And so she knew from that. And, you know, again, sort of naturally quite practical, so if there's anything need fixing, I could fix it. So she kind of knew, and we talked about, oh, I can't wait to get home and, you know, have my own garage and, you know, have my own tools and start doing up the house and things like that. So yeah, I think that's where it came from, really. And yeah, she said, yeah, fancy giving it a go.
So, wow. Yeah, that's where it happened. You just love those people in your life who know you so well, right? That seed got planted when you were so young, and then, you know, later on, she saw this opportunity and whoosh, look where it's gone.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. Although, you know, my mates still rib me for it, you know, sculptor. Yeah. You're a sculptor. Shut up. But, yeah, I get a lot of that from my mates. But yeah, it's initially anyway, they're all on board now.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the job of friends, isn't it? To give you a good A good time, hard time.
Yeah, that's when you know they're your good mates, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. So when you're about to start a new project, do you have the design concept all figured out before you even get going?
No, definitely not. I'm not an organized person, and the older I get, the sort of more ADD I think I am, you know, I'm pretty convinced I am. So yeah, it's very much off the cuff. You know, ideas usually come to me sort of as I'm laying in bed at night, and I'll come up with an idea and yeah, and then sort of go from there. I'll sketch it out first to get the kind of dimensions right, and because I can take a bit more time sort of comparing to the picture I'm working off or what have you. But then mm-hmm. it's in the workshop, I'm sort of a bit gung-ho, and quite often it doesn't end up the way I'd intended it to. Sometimes it does. But yeah, usually works out in the end. And I kind of break it down into, it's kind of three reasons to make a piece almost. It's like the first one's like just out of pure passion. You have an idea and I'm like, yes, I need to make that because like I really, really want to make that. Mm-hmm. Then you got the other one, which is commissions. Yeah, and sometimes those two will be in line, so it'll be a really cool commission, and then other times it's like a really ugly dog or something. You've got to make this person's ugly dog. And then the third one would be like, almost like a PR stunt, you know. So for example, I made a 12-foot Neptune sculpture. You know, do I know anyone in my client base that's going to buy a 12-foot Neptune sculpture? Probably not, but it got onto the BBC news and then into the Times newspaper, and through that I got commissions. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of like three different reasons for making things, you know?
Right. Oh, I can totally see that. I mean, and they would have differences between them. And I mean, even from a materials perspective, it's not like you can order up driftwood in a certain shape. So I would think like you'd have to have the right moment of having the right piece of wood available for the particular piece that you want to create.
Yeah. Yes and no, I suppose, because you like, yeah, there's some things you see and I'm like, yeah, that's got to be a whale, for example. Like there's nothing else you can be because you're halfway there already. Mm-hmm. You know, but then if you get a big enough piece of wood, you can make it into whatever you want because you can cut it up into a block of wood and then work from there.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of both, really. But yeah, it's hard to keep on top of it. In the winter, you're kind of harvesting driftwood, and compared to Canada and you know, you've got the huge lakes and rivers. Compared to Canada or New Zealand, for example, we probably got like 0.5% of the driftwood on shore as you guys. Mm-hmm. In terms of size, you know, it's like tiny little bits and you're quite lucky to get a bit bigger than a couple of feet squared. But yeah, so that's a challenge. And the further I get into my sort of career in doing this, the harder it is to keep up with the driftwood stuff, because not only have you got to collect it, you've got to dry it. And then sometimes you get halfway through a project and it's rotten in the middle and you kind of start again. So because of the demand, really, I've had to move slightly away from driftwood, particularly for the larger scale projects, because I just can't get hold of it, basically. And so yeah. I've hooked up with a local company that only chop down trees that are falling down already, and they're quite eco-focused. So, yeah, I've kind of, that's picking up the slack in terms of wood supply.
Mm-hmm. And you use reclaimed wood too, right? Maybe from other projects that are no longer, like they're not being used for their original purpose, but you can repurpose them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know a guy down, so Plymouth is a city just down the road from me, and they're quite big with, you know, they've got a big naval base down there, and they've, you know, it's very sort of ship and boat orientated, and they've got some huge dry docks for, you know, massive liners and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they have these oak and Douglas fir docking blocks that have a shelf life, and they'll get new ones, and they might even be going on to different composite materials now, I don't know, but they're getting rid of these things in droves, so I use a lot of those. And yeah, anything else, you know, even the byproducts in the workshop I'll try and use. Yeah, so the stuff that's sort of lying down on the floor after I've chainsawed a piece, I'll collect up and run through the bandsaw, and I make Highland Cow wall pieces out of those, just to try and use everything I possibly can in a positive way.
Yeah.
Without wasting anything.
Yeah. And I've definitely seen you do some really cool things too. And I'm guessing this is like when the wood maybe speaks to you, because you've used the color of the wood grain to the design's advantage. Sometimes you've even added color. I don't know how you do that, but it really adds to the piece. And so you're really, I think, like, your design concepts are constantly emerging based on what you're seeing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But that's good for someone with attention issues. You always got something different to do, you know, and kind of work with. It's like, you know, and I do kind of feel that something you've got, always quite self-critical, aren't you? And you almost, particularly being self-taught, you have a bit of like imposter syndrome.
Mm.
You know, and I don't know if I've really found a style yet, because like I'm just a bit like, oh, let's try that, or oh, let's try that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I see other artists that, you know, it's clearly their work, because maybe my clients will disagree with me, but I'm always trying new things out just because I find it interesting, and just because I can. You know, I've worked in offices before where you can only do a certain thing and you've been told what to do, you know, for 8 hours of your day.
Mm-hmm.
And so to wake up in the morning and be like, oh, what should I do today? It's quite exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll try anything.
Well, the design style is an interesting question, because, like, as you say, so there's sometimes you see people's work and you know exactly who it is before you even look at the name attached to it.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that comes over time. Like, I'm sure if you looked at that person's first piece compared to where they are now in their career, you might see differences. And, you know, is that sort of how you're working with it? You're just kind of playing around with a lot of different things that appeal to you, call out to you, things you just want to try, and over time, hoping that it will sort of, you know, come together in something that's uniquely yours?
Yeah, I definitely feel that way, because I think that's how people become more successful, I suppose. Because, you know, some of the guys that I follow have a really specific style, like you said, and you'd know it's theirs without even seeing who's made it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that, I guess that is a bit of a goal. I don't overthink it too much, because I quite like the freedom.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, that would be a nice place to get to. But then would I get bored of doing the same thing over and over, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the journey, right? That's part of the fun of the process, is I think design style just emerges. Like, I don't think it's necessarily something you can plan. Like, okay, by piece five, I'm going to have my design style set.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the more you can just trust in the process and trust in even like a higher power to get you there, you know, yeah, the easier it will be and the better it will be in the end.
Yeah, for sure. So I'd really love to learn a little bit more about your creative process when you're making a piece too. Things like, do you work on one piece at a time, or do you have several on the go? Do you like to work in a quiet environment or not? Like, what does your creative process look like?
Unfortunately, using chainsaws is never going to be a quiet environment.
True.
I plug myself into my noise cancelling headphones and crack on with some music in the background. But I mean, the creative process, I guess it's usually one piece at a time, unless, because the three different ways I work with the commissions and the things I want to make. And I think I need to make things that I want to make to keep my interest.
Yeah.
So it's quite important sometimes to put commissions on the back burner and really explore an idea that I've had off my own back, rather than it turning into this job that you've tried to get away from in the corporate world, almost, where you're being told what to do by somebody else at someone mm-hmm. else's deadlines and stuff. But yeah, so most of the time it's one project, and I'll have an idea, and then I'm not someone that could then just go and carve it without having some kind of reference photo.
Mm-hmm.
So I then basically trawl the internet for something similar. It might be a ballerina pose, and then I'd find like a really awesome photo or whatever of a ballerina, the more detail the better, so you can see their musculature and the anatomy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So once that's done, I'll sketch it into something similar, but, you know, something that I've sketched myself, and then that will be taken to the workshop, where sometimes I'll literally just stick it to a piece of wood and cut round that shape, because once you've got the, like, say for a full sculpture, like in the round sculpture 3D, if you've got the side profile and the front profile perfectly, then the rest is a bit easier to work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you can look from the side on the template and see the shoulder needs to be exactly there, you can sort of mark it with a line and work from there.
Yeah.
Again, I'm self-taught, so I don't know if this is the right way or the wrong way to do it, but that's my process.
Yeah.
And then gradually, you know, making the detail finer and finer. But it's very much when I start, I've got to finish that project. So I'm quite impatient and I want to finish it and see what it looks like. So, you know, often I'll be working 15-hour days for 7 days in a row.
Wow.
Which my wife loves, obviously. When are you coming home? But that's my process. I kind of need to finish it and see what it looks like at the end. I'm not someone that I should probably take a bit more time over things, but yeah, I'm a bit too impatient.
Well, it's kind of cool. You know, I always think sculpture is amazing. I don't have that kind of mind for it, but I'm always intrigued by people who can do sculpture because it's almost like you can see, you know, you hear sculptors say that they can see this image or this, you know, scene inside the material they're working from, and they're kind of just trying to release it, to bring it, to reveal it. And I find that fascinating. And I can definitely see how if you were in the middle of it, you're like, no, I have to, it's almost like a good TV show. You know, I have to see how this works out. I have to see the rest of that face emerge from this material.
Well, because quite often I, it's almost like I know when it's wrong rather than when it's right.
Mm.
So like, I'd be like, it's still not right. It's something not right about this. Is it the nose? It's the nostril. And you kind of look at the reference photos. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's like a process of elimination almost for me.
Right.
Until I get to a point where it looks right. And then I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And so for most of the process, it doesn't look right to me, which bothers me, obviously, because I'm like, this is looking rubbish. I need to do something about this. So I'll keep working until it looks, you know, in the right place.
Yeah. And then one moment, it's all just there.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
I'm sure. Is it a relief every time still?
Pretty much, yeah, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was a bit easier, but yeah.
Well, that's the kind of thing where like the hard work pays off in the end.
Yeah. I haven't had to burn anything yet.
Oh, this is good. Yeah, this is very good. Yeah. So you mentioned like the three different types of work that you do, you know, commissions, original work, and then like sort of promotional type things. Mm. And I'm wondering if there's any differences that you find like creatively between when you're working on your own projects and when you're doing, let's say, a commissioned piece? Like, is it equally as fulfilling, equally as energizing, or are there differences between the types of works that you do?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I've got to be careful what I say, haven't I? But yeah, I guess, yeah, because it's somebody else's idea. And like I said, but if it's a cool idea and you're on board with it, you'd be like, amazing. And I think that's maybe the problem with not having a specific style is I can make anything that people want.
Mm-hmm.
At a specific style, you'd be like, well, no, that's not going to work because you want it in paint and I don't do that kind of mm-hmm. thing. But yeah, no, it's definitely the ideas that I have organically and that has kind of come out of the ether. It's almost like a spiritual thing without sounding too crazy. I then feel like compelled to do that, almost like you said, like a higher power's come up with the idea and given it to me. Mm. So I find that more spiritual and nurturing and nourishing than, like I said, making someone's dog, for example. You know, I enjoy it because I love what I do.
Yeah.
But it's a different feeling, probably spiritually. You haven't quite got that. You know, sometimes you feel like it's been channeled through you because it's this idea that's come from wherever it's come from and you're kind of fulfilling that.
Yeah.
And weirdly, it's always those ones that get the most traction online anyway or get the most attention.
Huh.
I think that's one of the beauties of art, and other artists will be able to connect with that maybe.
Yeah.
It's kind of when you're just like fully giving in to the process. And one of the reasons I call it Zen Wood Design is because I was kind of fried when I got back from Dubai. We had a business over there, a load of staff. It's very stressful. And I found it really meditative, the whole process. You know, you're switching off, you're not thinking. It's very mindful.
Mm-hmm.
Doing anything creative, isn't it? Whether you're cooking or...
It's that direct connection between like your mind, your idea, your hands. And then, like you say, sometimes you just get into that Zen mode, of meditative mode of you're just doing. You're not thinking about it, but it's just happening.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a bit different than when you're having to be so present in that other business that you had. And in this one, it actually is to your benefit to get into that state of being.
Yeah, totally. And I kind of feel like that's how I've always meant to perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people lead with their head over their heart most of the time because that's the way we've kind of been brought up.
Yeah.
you know, yeah, so that's it's definitely my preferred way of working.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and before I move it on from that, because I actually did want to check in with you. So I know some of your sculptures that I've seen, some of the pieces, they have actual like color in them, like rainbow type colors. And I was curious, is that like, have you brought in like painting into your practice with that? Or do you use different types of wood that have different colors to them? Like how do you bring in such colors into these pieces?
Well, a bit of both. I mean, so like for Highland Cows, for example, I'll use different types of wood to give contrast and color. Mm-hmm. You know? Got oak, which is fairly dark, or pine, which is fairly light, and you've got oranges in cypress or whatever it might be. But the really colorful ones, was it a Highland Cow you're referring to, maybe?
I think so. And you had like a jellyfish type
that's paint. Paint. Just because it just struck me one day, I thought that would look really cool in color.
Yeah.
And made what is actually for my wife, who's like bonkers as I am and loves colourful stuff and, wears colourful clothes. And so I made it for her. And then again, I've kind of through social media, I got 3 or 4 more commissions for the same thing.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good idea. I'll keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, especially like things like jellyfish. I mean, they're so fluid and just like loose and flexible, you know, as a being, and then they're in the water. So they kind of like pulse with the water, and then the contrast between that and it being made of wood, like it's very intriguing.
Yeah, it works. You know, it's kind of accidentally worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those experiments that paid off. But the other good thing, you know, being commissioned, you know, someone might want a specific color accent in a Highland Cow to tie in with their decor, you know, and you can do that because you're making it from scratch. That's fine.
Yeah.
And it's not difficult to, you know, spray paint a bit of wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the piece and how it's all coming together.
Yeah. But I wouldn't dare call myself a painter.
You paint in the course of your woodworking. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you never know, right? You never know. Probably 10 years ago, you didn't think you'd be a driftwood sculptor either. So who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. The next.
Tomorrow's always a new day.
Yeah.
So another thing that you said is that you believe that sustainability should be at the heart of all business practices. And I wondered if you could share a little bit more about that philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so important if we want the world to stay as beautiful as we remember it. You know, arguably it was more beautiful 100 years ago before, yeah, all these things have been developed. But we, you know, I personally want my kids and grandkids and their grandchildren that can experience, you know, the bounty and the beauty of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's the flora, the fauna. Yeah, I think everyone's got a moral and ethical obligation as the dominant species on Earth to protect other less dominant species and ecosystems and micro ecosystems on the planet without sort of blindly going out there. And you think you're born and how much you take from the planet. You know, I'm 41 now. How much have I taken from the planet in the time I've been alive? I've certainly taken more than I've given back. You know, if you think that, you know, times that by billions and billions and billions of people, you know, something's going to have to be done. Otherwise, we're going to run out of these resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just me as a fairly, you know, small entity, individual on Earth, you know, not some huge corporate man with greed as his and ego as his number one focus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem, as we all know, because, you know, since the dawn of time, countries have been run by small men with huge egos and with massively power hungry. And unfortunately, they're the ones that want to be in power. The ones that should be in power are the quiet guys meditating on a hillside somewhere, but they're not interested, you know?
Yeah.
This sort of plundering of natural resources for personal gain is, you know, it's sickening, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do about it. I think you got to start with small steps, haven't you? And if everybody made 2 or 3 changes in their lives, then that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, then I noticed, you know, like you really walk your talk, because I noticed on your website, you mentioned that you make donations to charities who work in like reforestation, and you make sure to use sustainable energy sources for all your power for your tools and like things like that. It seems like it's really part of your consciousness.
I think it has to be. Like individuals have to take responsibility at some level, don't they?
Yeah.
Ownership of your impact on the planet. You can't just bury your head in you can just bury your head in the sand. But you know, I think we've got an ethical and moral responsibility not to bury our heads in the sand. Think about it, you know, click on Amazon six times a day and all this diesel and petrol that's being used to deliver your stuff, and without even thinking about it, it's been flown over from countries all around the world just to be at your front door the following day. You know, it's a conundrum that it's not going to be fixed in my lifetime, and probably not my kids, but if ever. But at least I can sleep well at night knowing that I've done my little bit.
Yeah, you do your piece and you talk about it, right? So that probably raises the question for other people, and maybe they reflect on it in their own lives and make some changes, and it grows from there.
Yeah, or just like try and lead by example, really, I suppose. You know, I'm not going to get on my soapbox, and I don't talk about it very often, but I feel fairly strongly about it.
Yeah.
You know, because I love nature so much, and, you know, it'd be a travesty that, well, it is a travesty that these amazing wildernesses and bits of the natural world are becoming smaller. You know, we want it to become bigger. That's my piece.
for sure. Well, and you also really support your community. So you're thinking globally, but you also work very locally, because I know I saw just an absolutely incredible angel sculpture that you did, and it was to help fundraise in support of the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, which is a charity that saves lives at sea. Yeah. And I wondered why it's important to you to contribute in that kind of way.
I just think, like, again, it's I've got luck with that particular sculpture. It was kind of an accident, and things have slowed down a little bit for me. And I just, again, this sort of had a bit of an epiphany lying in bed at night, and I made this sculpture and photographed it on the beach, and it completely blew up and went pretty much global.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, and then I thought, okay, well, loads of people want to see this thing, so I'll find somewhere where I can show people and they can come visit, because it touched a lot of people quite deeply. I had messages about loved ones that have passed away, and it being an angel, and they wanted to know exactly when I finished making it and did that, when their sister or dad or whatever grandparents had passed away.
Wow.
And it was emotional messages. Quite a tough time in a way to read all these awful things that have happened to people. Yeah. But anyway, so I thought, how, you know, it'd be great to have something else positive about it. And okay, you can come and see it. I'm going to be at the lifeboat station, and if you can contribute to them whilst you're seeing it, then that'd be even better. And yeah, they've made more money than they made on a single day before, I think, which is great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
The plan was then to visit all of the lifeboat stations in the country, and the dreaded COVID came along, so that stopped that. And now I've sold the piece. I can't show it off anymore, but yeah, maybe make another one.
Yeah. Well, in time, something else will probably call your name and you'll go from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd say. No, it's important, I think. And I rarely say no to, you know, if school will phone me up, say, can you come in and make some honey cows with the kids? I'll say yes, you know, because I enjoy that. It's nice to give back. Just donated a piece to the Sharks Trust, which are like a national shark protection charity.
Oh, that's going back to your roots, your very first piece.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, back to sharks. Yeah, that'd be great. That's they're auctioning it off at the Royal Geographical Society in London.
Cool.
Which would be awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, so do as much as I can.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. You can see how fulfilling this work is for you in so many different ways. Like, you're really able to tap into all these different parts of your life and parts of your own belief systems, and having an opportunity to impact them in different ways.
Yeah. And it's funny, actually, it's not something I think about a lot, but when you actually step back and look at, you know, even talking to you about, it's not very often I sit and talk about myself for this long. just talking to you, it's quite nice to actually see how far I've come.
Yeah. Well, you said earlier about, you know, being able to do like a bunch of small things, things that you can do, right? But you can see how even that adds up. And this is another example of that. You do small things over time. You don't think about them, but then when you sit back and reflect on it in its entirety, you realize, oh, you know, that's quite a bit. And there's quite a difference being made here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, really.
So, Brendan, on every episode of the podcast, we have a quotable quotes segment. And today's quote comes from Amy Goodman. And she said, "Go where the silence is and say something." What do you think about that?
Good question. Go where the silence is and say something. I think it's about not being afraid to speak up or speak out, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like exposing the elephant in the room, even if it's difficult to do so.
Yeah.
Sort of like essentially about seeking and living the truth. I think there's enough bullshit and wrongdoing in the world, so don't be afraid of exposing it and calling people out to make them accountable for their actions.
Yeah.
Just being, yeah.
Yeah. It makes me think too, like when I read that quote, I think, you know, all of these social commentary that you're making through your work, through your actions, like you said, you don't really talk about it a whole lot, but you do a lot of the sustainability work and helping, new generations discover these things and these crafts and things like that. But even in your work, you know, I think about the driftwood. I mean, by definition, like this driftwood is trees and pieces of wood that have been floating around for heaven knows how long. And, you know, probably to a lot of people, there's not much value or life in them. And they're kind of quiet in that sense, right? They're just sitting there, not able to be seen for the beauty that they are. And I feel like you see that and that you pick them up, you show them care, you reveal something that's within them that then others can see it after that. And so for me, I was thinking about what you do and I was thinking about this quote and that's kind of what was coming up for me. I don't know if that resonates for you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's one thing I love about the driftwood is that, yeah, you know, where's it come from? You know, yeah. I found wood that doesn't occur naturally in the UK. So, you know, it could have come from South America or South Africa or wherever.
Yeah.
You know, and there's other bits that are clearly structural for something. Is it a house? Is it an old galleon ship? It could be, you know, it could have been floating around for hundreds of years, which could mean that it's from a tree that was here thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is fascinating. Could be a tree that an old Roman person sat under and fell in love with his loved one. It's, you know, there's all these romantic notions you can conjure up, can't you even?
Yeah, you can let your imagination just go wild with it.
totally, yeah.
But it is true, and it does link us to the past of our planet and the past of the forests and just the natural world around us, and that's pretty special.
Yeah, totally. And it's, I feel like I'm doing it a disservice not to turn it into something magnificent again, you know. You can take it out of the sea and give it a new lease of life.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. So Brendan, when you need a little inspiration, are there any other creative people you look up to?
Yeah, I think I find all creative people worth looking up to.
Yeah.
And, you know, people that are, I meet them at craft fairs and they might only be doing it part-time, but they've got the passion to bother to try and get their work out there and, you know, set up the stalls and the gazebos, which is a nightmare. You know,
yeah. That's another whole job in itself.
Yeah, it totally is. And, you know, yeah, there's that. And then there was obviously some amazing famous artists. You know, I've just started getting more into looking at like historic sculptures, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, you know, and these guys are making huge scale projects out of marble hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Some of these things, I went to a museum in Cambridge recently and there's stuff that predates, you know, it's like BC, 400 years BC.
Huh.
And it's just so anatomically accurate. And being a sculptor, I think, God, that's so difficult. You know, even with all the images, I can go on Google and find, you know, millions of images of anything. And these guys have, they're maybe looking at a subject in front of them, but then they've got to scale it up by 15, 20 times, you know.
It's, yeah,
a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I find that fascinating. There's a guy that works with wood called, what's his name? Bruno Wolpoff, I think. I don't know, that's probably not how you pronounce it. He's an Italian wood sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And he produces absolutely sensational figurative wood sculptures that look really lifelike. So yeah, quite an inspiration to a non-trained guy like me.
Mm-hmm.
And something to look up to and aspire to, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always somebody out there. I feel like you always inspire other people and then other people always inspire you. It's like this cool circle of inspiration.
Yeah. And I think it's, and also about like recognizing inspiration or being open to being inspired.
Yep.
You know, being, yeah, sort of having an open heart in terms of that and using your intuition to be inspired, because it can come from anywhere, can't it? It could be a movie you watched. It could be an old lady down the road that's been with her husband for 70 years, you know. It could be all these amazing things in life. It's good to Be inspired by anything.
Yeah, like you say, just staying open to the experiences or the, you know, emotions that you might sense and all that kind of thing and what it brings up for you.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. So any tips for our listeners on how they can start up or maybe keep up the creative energy in their lives?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's so many people I know, particularly get to my age maybe, or, you know, that they're kind of unhappy or unfulfilled in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they might look at what I'm doing or another creator is doing and think, God, you know, how lucky are they? But it's going to take you've got to take some risks to get there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for years we've been sold metrics of success that don't cultivate much joy or creativity or contentment. You know, society's obsession with money, title, house, car, looks is like a social construct, and one that if you kind of chase that blindly, it will leave you feeling, you know, like a lack of fulfillment. So I think to attain true contentment, you must trust your instinct over intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Follow your heart, and yeah, everyone's guilty of falling into the trap of, you know, that sort of rat race kind of thing. But I think, yeah, just go and sit somewhere quietly and reflect on what you really want in your life. And yeah, if you're feeling that draw of you need to do something creative, then yeah, again, sit quietly, find out what it is that you really love to do. You know, when did you last feel really content and happy doing something? Yeah, it might be putting up a shelf at home, you know, just find something that ticks the box and presses those buttons and just go for it, you know, start small. And yeah, you know, and I think yeah, there's no time like the present, really. There's always a reason not to start now, but we've only got one crack at this. So I think you owe your friends, your family, your creator, yourself to be happy daily.
Yeah.
You know, there's no rule to life either. It's not like you have to go to university, you have to go to get a job, and you have to go and sit in an office for 8 hours a day, which I've done and I hated for a number of years. So go out and start smashing it, start doing what you were born to do, whatever that might be.
Yes. I love that. That's awesome advice. Yeah. I think that's great.
Like, also like reach out to other creatives, like most of them are nice people. Mm-hmm. Reach out for advice, you know, ask them, you can pop over for a chat, you know, come and see what they do. If someone wanted to come to my workshop, I'd say yes in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even think about it. Yeah. Pop down, we'll have a chat, have a cup of tea, and you know, we'll have a chat about it, you know?
Yeah.
Might be buried deep in a lot of people, but it's definitely there. Dig deep and get it.
It's true. There are things that you can, if you pay attention, you notice that you light up, and sometimes they're buried quite a bit, but eventually they'll make themselves known. And if you're open to noticing it, you know, then you can potentially be down a whole new path.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you're unhappy, you know, deep down and unfulfilled, and a lot of people think they're in a position, well, you know, there's always a solution. Oh, well, what about my mortgage? What about this? Well, you could sell your house and live in a van for a bit. And that sort of, you know, that will give you the opportunity to do something you want to do. You know, there's always a solution.
Yeah.
I think you can't focus on, there is a lot of people have a victim mentality where they're focusing on the problem, not the solution.
Right.
I think if you focus on that solution, the problems will disappear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perspective, right?
Totally. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. And as you let yourself open up to things, sometimes your view changes.
Yeah, it's fear ultimately, isn't it? And we've all felt that, you know, and I mean, plain sailing all the way for me, you know, I started up this thing and it was great. And then it took a bit of a nosedive. I was thinking, crikey, is this the end of it? And then,
yeah,
I forget, you know, it's just the way it works.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes.
But yeah, it's better than being flogged to making money for someone else, I think.
You've found your creative passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Brendan, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Now, if people want to reach out or see more of your work, where can they find you?
Zen Wood Design. So it's on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok occasionally. A bit old for that, but I'm trying. and yeah, not much on Twitter because I haven't got time.
Yeah.
Zen Wood Design. I've got a website as well, .co.uk. Obviously being in England, and reach out. I'm happy to talk to anyone.
Amazing. Okay, well, for sure I will include all of those details in the show notes so that everyone can find you really easily.
Oh, thanks, Andrew.
And so again, I just really want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, you're welcome. It's been lovely chatting.
Yes. And a big thank you, of course, also goes out to our listeners for tuning into the Creative Pulse podcast. For more information on our guests, follow us on Instagram at Creative Pulse Podcast or Twitter at Creative Pulse TW. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other platform, be sure to subscribe or follow so you won't miss any of the episodes. And if you like the show, feel free to leave a review. And join me for upcoming episodes when I'll talk to more people about their creative passions. Bye for now.